welcome to My Bloody Horrorcast.
We're back in a different murder room.
That's right, that's right. It's our first time over to the very creative office room of Miss Steph here, so I'm pretty excited that we're over here. Gives a good vibe to the episode this week, I think. So, the theme of the week, you know, everyone's back to school. Everyone's back. College, high school, schools, all over, of every grade level are back within the last couple weeks, and you know, what better time to talk about back to school than back to school horror?
Yeah, we tried to pick three. I don't know how we really came to these three. We wanted to have like kind of a variety, and we didn't want to pick something that that we didn't think we could add anything to.
Right, right. Also, you know, when it comes to high school and college horror, there's a lot of films that deal with high school or college students. There's very few that actually have them on college and high school grounds. So we tried to pick movies where it had some something to do with the actual school itself, or where the plot was primarily with while school was in session. Because, you know, we could have done like I Know What You Did Last Summer, but that was during the summer. School wasn't in.
Yeah, that's totally a summer vacation.
So, yeah, but first, let's go back to some of the films that we've seen. I'm going to actually, some of mine are going to tie into later, so I'll probably keep a couple of mine because they're going to work with the, some of the films I'm going to talk about later. But let's start with you, Steph. What are some of the things that you've been watching?
All right. Well, my friend is a big fan of this podcast called The Flop House, and I've only listened to this saga that he sent me so that I could watch the movie Castle Freak. Stuart Gordon,
yes.
Barbara Crampton, Jeffrey Combs. It's about this family who inherits an Italian castle, and as the title implies, there's a murderous freak who dwells there. It's excellent. It's really great. So that came out in 1995. I also saw The Devil's Candy, which you talked about seeing kind of when it first became video on demand, but yeah. I just got around to it now that it's on Netflix.
Ethan Embry in his comeback role.
He's comeback horror role. Great. And he's kind of ripped. It's sort of freaky.
I didn't recognize him at first at all.
No, but he's excellent. And I had to look up that actor's name, Pruitt Taylor Vince. He's in like a bunch of things. And I thought he was so good in this role because he is creepy, like just naturally kind of physically a creepy presence. But there is something that seems kind of vulnerable about him.
He's every role that I've seen him in, as far back as I can remember, he was always the creepy, psychotic, but somehow sad killer or stalker or what have you. He's that is definitely his bread and butter. He's probably been, I'm sure he can never get a straight role in a film after.
I mean,
I've seen him like in one or two like cameo roles where he plays in like a drama, but you know, it's...
There's this one scene in The Devil's Candy where his character, Pruitt Taylor Vince, shows up at the house. And he's talking to the daughter, and Ethan Embry dad, like, freaks out on him. And the mom and daughter are just like, what happened to treating everybody the way you wanted to be treated? Can't you see he's, like, troubled, and don't you have any compassion? And I'm like, oh, I'm right there with you. There is something about that guy where if we hadn't seen him, you know, murder at the beginning, you might think to yourself, don't go too hard on him.
You know what? That guy gives me the creeps every time I see him. I don't trust him from the start. I don't believe he has any good intentions. Old PTB.
But yeah, The Devil's Candy was great. It was better than I thought. The pacing is quick. It's a nice short movie. And there's another scene with him where he wakes up the daughter. Do you know what I'm talking about? And that was so scary. I'm like, this is my nightmare.
Yeah. No, there's some genuinely frightening moments in that film, suspenseful as well. That does a really good job.
Yeah, I wish I'd watched it earlier. And then the last thing I watched, it's not really a horror movie, but it is like a very dark dystopian, and it's High Rise, which is the Ben Wheatley movie that came out maybe a couple years ago. It's based on a J.G. Ballard novel, and it's a dystopian world, but in the 1970s, set in this high-rise tower with a strict social structure. The rich people are obviously at the top. The poor people are at the bottom. There's a bunch of chaos and strife with the imbalance. So
every British movie ever.
I know. And I mean, as someone who just really likes like Snowpiercer or like Blade Runner or just anything like that, I just think it's interesting. I think it's one of the better Ben Wheatley movies.
Nice.
How about you?
Well, like I said, a lot of them are going to apply to what we're the things we're talking about tonight and our main theme. But Eyes of a Stranger, I went back to look at, you know, when we were talking about 80s, primarily, you know, a lot of the great high school and college slasher films occurred in the 80s, 70s, 80s. There are some great ones in the 90s, as we'll mention, and here and there past that. In fact, Scream brought back that genre, that subgenre, pretty strongly for a while in the late 90s. But I did watch something called Eyes of a Stranger, 1981. Ken Wiederhorn's the director. I think it's one of his earliest films. And it's got one of the Lauren Tews, who was a star in The Love Boat at that time, which, what an interesting role for her to play. You know? I wonder what that did for her bankability, really, because it's a pretty... I mean, this is a seedy slasher film. It's gory. It's nasty. It's the subject matter is just, you know, repulsive to a certain extent. It's pretty nasty. Basically, premise being this woman and her daughter. Her daughter is blind, and also sort of her senses have sort of been dulled or killed off from an assault she survived as a child, and so. You have this mom and daughter. Meanwhile, there is a serial killer in the city who's going around assaulting and killing women. And so what it turns out, though, is that this killer lives in the same apartment building as the main character. And so she starts to suspect some things that she's also a news reporter, so of course she's...
Is that the Jennifer Jason Leigh character?
No, it's the daughter.
Oh, okay.
Jennifer Jason Leigh's daughter, yeah, because Jennifer Jason Leigh could have only been 16, 17 at this time, if that. So, So, I mean, there are some interesting parts in the film as she sort of becomes, she's on, you know, the hunt. She's tracking down this killer. And there are some really good suspenseful scenes there. There's some good gore. But like I said, it's really seedy and repulsive at the same time. So, you know, it's one of those films that it was a video nasty in the 80s. For that reason, it's probably worth searching out if you're a fan of early 80s horror.
I'm sold.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, like I said, it's got an early Jennifer Jason Leigh performance. And she's really good as this daughter. Plays the role very well. And probably a little too young for some of the subject matter, in my opinion, if I were her dad. But, you know, hey, who knows? So Eyes of a Stranger is one I would recommend.
Cool. Definitely have to watch it.
Yeah.
Did you have any others?
That's the only one I was going to talk about for now, yeah.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Sticking with the theme.
Yeah.
Well, do we want to go chronologically?
We can, sure. I guess. Let's,
House on Sorority Row.
That would be the first one, 1982.
Okay, so it's basically just the sorority house, and it's set ahead of a graduation party they're going to throw. I don't think there was anything particularly new or novel that made it stand out from other slashers. I mean, there's a little bit of Black Christmas in there, like the sorority girl setup, the killer in the attic, and there's a little bit of Friday the 13th, like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But despite that, I still think this is a really solid movie.
It's a well-made film.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's fairly bloodless. If you're looking for some really good gore, you're going to be, you know, missing it a little bit in this film. But there are some really good suspenseful scenes. There's a lot of really well-done scenes in the film. And I thought that... So this is redone as a movie called Sorority Row in 2009, which I watched.
What?
Yeah. I had forgotten. It's got a bunch of, like, as all these movies from the early 2000s, mid to late 2000s remakes do, it's a bunch of, like, WB kids, I'm pretty sure. It follows the same basic idea that there's a group of sorority sisters who are responsible or witness a murder and have to see who cracks first, basically, you know, and who can survive the killer who supposedly knows what they did. And the remake is actually one of the better remakes of 80s horror that I've seen. It's still not good, necessarily.
Damning with faint praise, Carrie.
Yes, but it is, it's far better than, of course, we have differing opinions, than the Prom Night or Black Christmas remakes, which were part of that late 90s resurgence.
I agree with you 100% on the Prom Night remake. It's terrible awful.
Film.
But I think there are things to be enjoyed with Black Xmas. Anyway.
I know. Well, I know. And yes, we will discuss that another time. But no, I enjoyed it. I thought that the scene, particularly at the end, I thought the last 20 minutes were really suspenseful.
The the clown
yes
costume moment. That was
the moment where she's standing in the corner of the attic right there. Oh, what a great scene.
No, I thought there were plenty of like satisfying scares and details, like just the cane is the murder weapon.
Yes.
The clowns, that murky pool. I think the best death in the movie is that like kind of shy girl with the bathroom stall and then later head in the toilet.
The head in the toilet. Oh, what a great scene. Inexplicably, and you know, later, as we'll discuss with Scream later on, I'll probably tie Scream into a lot of the films we're talking about today because you can't help it. The women keep running in the bathroom.
I know.
The one place that there is absolutely no exit. At least if you go into a bedroom, you might be able to jump out the window. You'll probably break a leg, maybe die, but at least you have an opportunity. And they keep running in the bathroom still. But, of course, it allows us to have this great scene with the disemboweled head on the toilet. So, you know.
But, yeah, the death preceding it, too, where she is basically beheaded with her own knife.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good.
No, there's some great... It's, you know, again, it's one of those movies that... I'm guessing a lot of casual horror fans out there probably haven't seen House in Sorority Row. Hmm. It was kind of forgotten to a certain extent, I think. I mean, I really only discovered it because it was on Prime. And I think I mentioned it because I'd seen it on Prime.
Yeah, I don't think I'd seen it before. Mm-mm. It didn't look familiar to me as I was watching.
No, and it's a, you know, the director didn't go on to do a whole lot, didn't have a whole lot of star power, though Harley Kozak is in it, and she went on to have a lot of...
Okay, that's actually something I was going to say. I wasn't familiar with the women who were cast. I thought they did a great job. I really liked Mean Girl Vicky.
The characters are good. Mean Girl Vicky is good. No, the acting by the ladies is really good. I'd say above par, you know, above where normal, you know, most of those roles. Mm-hmm. Like, especially like Prom Night. Prom Night is not, I mean, the acting is not, aside from Jamie Lee, it's pretty bad.
Right.
I thought.
Well, they were just banking on the disco carrying
it. That's
all
they were doing. It's true. It's true. So, so yeah, I mean, it's, again, if you're looking for a good early 80s horror film that's somewhat forgotten over time, I think House in Sorority Row is a good one and definitely a good back to school.
Yeah, I would recommend it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. There were some phone call scenes in it, which we definitely have a lot of in Scream.
Mm-hmm.
There were, the attic scene, I thought, was definitely lifted in Scream, for sure. There were some elements of that attic scene that were done, probably even better, actually, in House Sorority Row, but were also done in Scream. Okay.
That house mother, though, like, why was this woman a sorority house mother when she's clearly mentally unwell?
Oh, it's bizarre. Yeah, the subplots in it are really strange and kind of fun, and they're just sort of wackiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's she's completely just unhinged, basically. And
I should also say, I wasn't expecting it to be one of those movies that starts, I don't remember when it starts, the 60s, and then
yes,
it jumps to the modern day, which in this case is the early 80s.
Right. Yeah. But no, definitely, overall, solid entry, mm-hmm, and it's something I think we both recommend. Now, the next one, though, that we're going to talk about.
Night of the Creeps.
I have been a fan of this film for a long time.
I saw it for the first time really recently.
I'm excited for you. I'm excited that you saw it, obviously.
No, it was amazing. It was so good. It was funny. Like, it has legit gross moments. It's very charming.
Yes. It's another one of those... you know, it was a huge box office bomb when it came out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It made like 500 and change. That's it. 1,000. It was a huge failure. And the studio, of course, in those days...
And this came out before 86, the director did Monster Squad, right?
A year before Monster Squad, okay. Yeah. So this is Fred Decker's first film. It was completely relegated to the horror bin, but slowly over time, as it came to video, like a lot of great films do, it attained the cult status it enjoys today. And finally, now we have Blu-ray edition, which I believe has both endings on it, which I have only been able to watch the original ending on like YouTube,
mm-hmm,
and haven't been able to go back and watch it, you know, through all the way through with the film intact. So.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, one thing I liked about it was how many things that I like were smashed into one movie, and things I assume the director really likes, because you've got like a space invasion, then you have zombies, then you have a hard-boiled detective. And then the characters all have, like, the horror director names. There's, like, Romero, Cronenberg, Hooper, Landis,
yes,
Raimi.
Where you're, hey, I, you know, wear your influences on your sleeves, and no problem with that. We talked about with The Void. It was, you know, did that very well. Films like this do harken back to the space age 50s films, creature films from the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And this one's another flashback because it starts, like, black and white. It's the 1950s this alien thing comes to Earth.
You hear some, you know, Johnny Rivers playing on the stereo. You're like, oh, what's going on? This movie is one of my all-time favorite horror films.
Wow. I can see why.
It gets better with age to me also. It's still sort of it's a great relic from the 80s, it really is. I think that the effects are good enough and it's fun enough that it still works today.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain movies, I don't know if it's necessarily timeless, but I think it still plays. Like, awesome. If you watch it for the first time recently in 2017.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Right. It has, and plus, you know, they could have gone two different ways. I like that it's sort of sardonic and silly at the same time because it's poking fun at itself, but it's also showing respect for horror as a whole. So it's a love letter to horror. It's much, there's a lot of similarities to films like Scream that have a mix of comedy and horror because they're sort of laughing at themselves at the same time they want to scare the shit out of you. So.
I'd say there's not as much irony in Night of the Creeps.
There's not. Because, I mean, they are playing it a little straighter. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite, I mean, so the detective Tom Atkins is one of my favorite.
Tom Atkins is
roles in a horror movie
ever. The absolute star and hero of the movie. It's not the National Lampoon kid. It's Tom Atkins.
Yeah, it was Jason Lively and TJ, what's his name? The duo, the college nebbish nerd duo. No, it's Tom Atkins' movie.
Mm-hmm.
Thrill me, you know.
it's Miller time.
Duck. It's Miller time. Right? Yeah, exactly. You know, this guy, he commands the movie. And actually, Tom Atkins in interviews has said that Night of the Creeps was his favorite role.
Oh.
So I thought that was cool. And how could it not be? I mean, what a fun role to play.
Well, okay. I also wasn't totally familiar with Tom Atkins when the movie started, and Jason, who was showing the movie, he's like, oh, you'll recognize him when you see him. I'm like, Creepshow! Like,
yes,
of course!
Yes,
and probably a ton of other things.
He's definitely a horror veteran. I can't think of all the films he's been in, but I should look that up, actually, to see. Another interesting thing, so this is Fred Dekker's first movie. If you're, you know, familiar with 90s action movies, you know Shane Black, the screenwriter. He wrote Lethal Weapons and, you know, every big action movie of the 90s, including The Last Boy Scout. he recently also did The Nice Guys, which I thought was really fun. The Russell Crowe, Ryan Gosling, throwback kind of pulp detective action movie.
Yeah,
and
that was good.
And Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I also thought was really fun. So Shane Black and Dekker were friends, and Shane Black helped write some of the script. I can only imagine that some of the catchphrase lines probably had some Shane Black influence on him. I just see that.
Yeah, I had to look up Fred Dekker to see his other movies. It turns out Monster Squad, I think, is the only other one I've really seen. But
right.
But he's co-writing the upcoming Predator movie, which Shane Black's directing.
I thought that was really interesting. So they're back together. These are good buddies that came up together and they're back. He also wrote House.
You know, I have not seen American House.
No, I don't know. It will never compare with Japanese Hasu.
I know. Hasu is like one of my favorites.
I watched it because of you, and I, it's like nothing I've ever seen. It's a gloriously just insane movie. It's truly wonderful. But he wrote House, and House is worth checking out. And House 2, the second story. He wrote that as well. He also wrote If Looks Could Kill, which is a movie that had Richard Grieco, who at the time was the 21... Jump Street star. He wrote that as well.
I thought that was kind of interesting. But I also haven't seen it, so.
It's a ridiculous film that I saw in the theater when I was a wee lad.
Night of the Creeps is awesome. Like, the frat guys are, like, hilarious. They're, like, half of them must be 40.
Right.
They're, like,
right.
At this frat. And the Bradster.
The Bradster. Oh, my God. There's so many. They're having so much fun. You just have to imagine that the set was just people were trying to keep a straight face. They're just having such a good time filming. You get that sense. And, yeah, it has everything you want. It has leeches that invade your brain. It's got zombies. It's got explosions. Lawnmower. Fights. I mean, there's really, I mean, like you said, Dekker throws kind of everything into this, and it's just kind of glorious to see. And it keeps the suspense going through, you know, through the middle, and then the end is just, last 20-25 minutes are just fantastic.
So which was the original ending? Because the one I saw was, Okay, I think...
Is it where the leeches jump out, or the slugs jump out of the dog's face?
Yeah, I saw the dog one.
So there is another ending that Decker originally wanted that the studio would not agree to do. I think it's because...
I watched the alien one later, but I don't know which one was actually supposed to be.
The dog one was the studio version. Okay. The alien one is the one that Decker wanted.
Hmm.
Yeah. I can see the studio wants the jump scare and, you know, oh, what's going to happen?
No, I have it backwards. The one that was on the DVD I watched was the one where Tom Atkins' character comes out. He's like crispy, but yeah. He's like infested. And then there's the cemetery and then the aliens. And then I had to go find the one with the dog.
So the dog one was actually in the theatrical release. And a lot of the early direct-to-video releases.
Nice.
But yeah, so what a fun one though. If you haven't seen Night of the Creeps, if you're out there listening and you're a horror fan, it's a must.
You
have to see this movie. And if you like 80s films, you haven't seen it, then your 80s viewing collection is just not complete.
I feel ridiculous that I waited so long to see it.
But all that matters is that you did.
I know. It's so good.
So it was a great one. Anything else to say about it? I don't know what else there is to say other than it's so good.
Some of the mood of it, you would expect the mood to come down. Like, literally, our hero is an alcoholic and he's suicidal.
Yeah.
But he's so awesome. Like, I really love the scene where the cops are chasing down, like, one of the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
With an axe. Like, this zombie has an axe and the cops are chasing him down in their car. And then Tom Atkins just leaps over a fence and he's just there on the scene. Like, he didn't have to drive to get there. Like,
No. He's just that good, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Old Tom Atkins, yeah.
It's amazing. And the shooting scene, like, in the, I guess it's a sorority house after it's Miller time.
Yes.
Where it, like, spins around. That's, like, amazing.
Yes. There's so many. Again, it's one of those movies where you could tell the director, the cast, everyone involved with this, you know, is just having fun. They're just wide open, doing whatever they want to do. And I love that. So yeah, Night of the Creeps, 1986. Now, Decker, in an interview from about 3 or 4 years ago, mentioned that he would like to do a sequel to Night of the Creeps. Not
he
a remake.
This a few years ago?
Mm-hmm. He'd like to do a sequel to Night of the Creeps. Not a remake. He also mentioned that Rob Cohen has been thinking about doing... Possibly has been talking about doing a remake of Monster Squad, and Fred Decker was not happy about that. But he said that he thought it'd be kind of interesting to do a remake. Now, if they did a sequel to Night of the Creeps, though, I think you should keep it in the 80s, right? I mean, shouldn't it still be in the same era?
Okay, so it's not like Twin Peaks The Return.
Well, I don't know. What do you do? So, it's kind of an interesting idea. I'm not sure what I think about a sequel after a movie that came out, 31 years ago.
That'd be hard. That'd be really hard.
Lightning doesn't strike twice, usually, you know?
Also, I'm not sure if Tom Atkins would be up for it, and I think we would all, like, throw a fucking fit if he was recast.
That's the problem, is you can't... Yeah. I mean, Tom Atkins, after 30 years, he's got to be in his 70s or 80s now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you just... So that would be weird to me as well. But yeah, good old Night of the Creeps.
All right, is it time to jump a decade forward into the 90s?
I think we do. We've covered the 80s, so...
It's time for Scream.
I mean, if you're talking about penultimate high school slasher film, I mean, go no further than Scream. It is the quintessential now. I'm sure at a certain point, you know, it may have been Halloween,
mm-hmm.
Which is high school horror. It may have been... Prom Night wasn't that well received. I think it was a hit, but not a huge hit. You know, there were films before that were big on that, but I mean, Scream revitalized that genre completely and basically changed horror at that point. It moved toward a new direction.
I think it's the first and the best of all of those popular 90s horror movies.
Right. What do we have? Like Urban Legend. I Know What You Did Last
the
Summer.
Worst.
Urban Legend is terrible.
It's so bad, and it should be awesome.
Yes. Valentine.
Valentine's pretty bad, too.
It is. Final Destination, I liked.
Final Destination's great, but I like that franchise in a different way.
Right. That's why it is different. Very little of it takes place in school. It's also, I believe, during summer break, I think, as well. I forget. Anyway. But yeah, so I mean, Scream's great. It's going back and watching some of these films also, there's just so many, as we talked about in House and Sorority Row. We can look at the Prom Night films, which are sort of a couple of my, we talked about those possibly being some notable mentions. I know we each have our own notable mentions. Prom Night 1 and 2 would be one of mine, and so many pieces of Prom Night are done way better in Scream. Mm-hmm. Devices that don't work in a film that's so milquetoast like the original Prom Night work really well in a dynamic film like Scream with really fine actors, really good young actors across the board. But no, going back and watching it like I did the other day, you watched it again as well, I'm sure.
I did.
It still holds up just as well as it did 21 years ago.
I think because when I watched it, I was in like the 7th grade.
Right.
So I thought it was awesome then. But watching it now, I was surprised how good it still is. Because I Know What You Did Last Summer, I still think that's good, but...
It is good.
It's not as good when you're watching it a little later.
Well, the problem is I Know What You Did Last Summer takes itself so seriously.
Very seriously.
And I think that can work for horror films, but I think it just... Well, also, the source material for I Know What You Did Last Summer is a drama, not a slasher film. But just a drama about these kids that are responsible for the death of a friend's brother and blah, blah, blah. So they were making it slightly more in that vein. Whereas Scream was just like, we're going to take all the things that we love and hate about horror films and put them all into one. Sort of like Cabin in the Woods did a decade
but
plus
I
later.
But I think it's only perfect and classic in the first Scream movie.
True.
It was maybe I should rewatch the other sequels.
Scream 4 was a complete letdown. Scream 3 was just wasn't scary to me. Mm-hmm. Everything was too familiar in the third one, and the formula was too familiar, and it just wasn't fun. Scream 2 still had some great set pieces in it.
But the first Scream, like from the Drew Barrymore, like
that's one of the all-time, you know, plot twists right there for you, as far as having a popular actress who's just coming back into the mainstream and Drew Barrymore. And then killing her off in the first 12 minutes of the film.
I know. I can still see, like, the VHS case in my head. Like, she's on there.
Yeah.
And you think she might be around, but she's not.
Yeah, no. It was brilliant marketing, too, to put her on the case, or her likeness on the case. Because, you know, before you see the movie, you're like, oh, awesome, Drew Barrymore's in
there. I know. And she's just being terrorized by this, like, pop culture creep. Yep. While her popcorn burns and, like, chaos reigns. And
yes.
Just like he says, like, she ends up with her insides on her outsides.
Yep. No, it's great, and it takes a lot of the evil caller from Prom Night, the evil caller from Eyes of the Stranger, it takes and sort of plays with that whole, that whole trope, and does it to great effect throughout the film. Whereas nowadays, maybe, is that as effective now that everyone has a cell phone?
No.
And everyone has caller ID?
It would have to be set back in time.
It would, yeah.
And that even comes up in, like, one of the Scream sequels, where she's just like, nice try, I have caller ID or something.
Right, right. But I guess you kind of had to do at the same time. It doesn't make it as scary. Scream is based on a series of murders that took place, I believe, in Texas. Where the killer was actually stalking high school friends, girls and guys, and... was doing prank phone calls and things like that, but were, you know, deadly phone calls, that kind of thing. So it was interesting how it was influenced by an actual case.
Did not know that.
Here's another funny thing. Originally for the killer, they were going to have him wear a white robe because they thought, ooh, it would look like a ghost in the night. Then they realized would look like a Klansman. So they're like, well, this isn't good. So they obviously made the correct and only right decision and changed to a black robe. But I thought that was kind of funny.
That's awesome.
Another funny thing I was reading about is that use of caller ID increased evidently threefold, according to data they found from phone companies after the film.
After the release of Scream.
Now, I don't see the data behind that. I only saw that statement made. I don't know if they could back it up, but I like the idea that happened. It was a launching board. You know, a lot of the great movies like that, you know, they come along every once in a while are a launching board for great actors or at least popular actors. I mean, so you had, you know, Skeet Ulrich became a star for a brief moment, basically due to Scream. Neve Campbell had by far her biggest role in Scream, as far as aside from TV, as far as film goes.
That's true. But she's been in other great things since.
She has, but that was what launched her, you know, and at that time. And most of them actually never went on to horror. Most of them, that was their one and only stop for horror. A lot of them went on to do other things, which is fine, you know. The movie was a huge success, so it got all of them noticed, got all of them roles. Matthew Lillard, of course, wasn't that well known, and that kind of he got him going. Mm-hmm. Jamie Kennedy. I mean, so many actors that had careers after that that were helped or at least assisted.
Do you have a favorite character / actor in Scream?
I mean, I love Jamie Kennedy.
Jamie Kennedy's pretty great.
I mean, he does...
That is definitely his best role.
It is. And he gives you the horror rules when they're watching Halloween. Great scenes with him. I thought he was great. I also, my honorable mentions would go to Courtney Cox and David Arquette,
they're my two favorites.
Yeah, I get that. I totally understand
that. They're so great. Oh my god.
They actually married after the Scream.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But they're no longer together.
No,
right?
It only lasted like a couple years. But
that's depressing.
But the chemistry from their roles in Scream evidently was a real thing for a minute. So.
No, Deputy Dewey is, I think, one of the best Scream characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they said that originally, David Arquette, the role of Deputy Dewey was supposed to be sort of this kind of hunk of a man, big-time guy, serious guy. And evidently, he really campaigned for the role to be kind of sort of goofy a little bit, because that would add to some of the plot foibles later on.
Like he's living with his mom and his sister who, don't respect him.
Right.
Got his gun in his PJs when, Sydney's spending the night. It's awesome.
It gives an add dimension. I mean, really what makes Scream a great film and what a lot of horror films forget, which is, I think, crazy because it always goes back to the same thing, is that great characters make a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, at the end of the day, it's what sets Scream apart from a lot of the movies that it kind of played on, and it is better than those films because of these great characters. And the other thing I like about Scream, and I liked the one good thing I liked about Prom Night 2 is there are some great chase scenes.
Oh, yeah.
That go on for a while. And I love a great chase scene that doesn't happen in like a minute. I love, one of the best parts of Prom Night is there is a 9-minute chase scene near the end of the film where she's running through the halls school. Of the school at night during the actual prom. And that's a really suspenseful, easily, in my opinion, the most suspenseful part of the film is right there. And Scream did that. Scream had these fantastic set pieces throughout it. They knew exactly what they were doing, and honestly, they had a great screenwriter in Kevin Williamson. That makes a huge difference.
I forgot he was the screenwriter, Dawson's Creek.
Kevin Williamson knows how to make an ensemble comedy. He knows how to make a teen drama as well, I should say, ensemble drama and a teen drama. And he knows how, and so having him as a screenwriter, it's sort of like the, everything works out, just falls into place perfectly in that movie.
Yeah, well, I was thinking how Wes Craven sort of did something like Scream before with The Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's like Freddy, but it's like the movie, and they're like aware of the whole thing.
Well, he did, and no, he definitely plays into that. But Kevin,
is it New Nightmare? Sorry, I was blanking on the name.
Is New Nightmare? He does play on that, and of course, in the original Nightmare as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that the difference is Kevin Williamson has the comedic element.
Definitely.
And that elevates the film because it doesn't take itself too seriously, and yet manages to be scary. And so I thought that was, and again, a great script is priceless to a great director.
No, he knows how to do a self-aware biting teens.
Mm-hmm. So, Scream, I mean, it's been talked to death over time, so I don't know what more we can bring to it other than it's still one of the great slasher films of all time.
I think over time, my opinion of Scream had diminished, and rewatching it really made me realize that it's great. So,
also, here's the deal. I'm guessing that a lot of people who grew up who watched that when they were younger,
there were a lot of people who probably awesome the first time I saw it.
Right, you probably haven't watched it in a while, and you look back, and we all sort of all those movies sort of melt into one general morass of high school teen films. This still is far and above far and away the best of the bunch, and is reinforced now, so with the current viewing. So if you haven't watched Scream in a while, I mean, I would go back and watch it. It's great.
Absolutely.
And it will remind you how good horror movies can be, because we're inundated with crappy horror films these days. There are some great ones, too. I mean, horror is a time where there are lots of great horror films, but there, you know, in the 20 years since Scream has come out, there are a lot of imitators of that style of film, and it's still... It proves to be better.
Right on the heels of Scream, we got a bunch of them, like we mentioned earlier. Yeah. Did you watch Scream the TV show?
I did not.
I haven't watched it either. I've heard mixed things, but I sort of feel like I'll check it out. Maybe the next time I get sick, that'll be the thing I marathon.
That's right. I did see Scream Queens.
Oh, well, Scream Queens. Excellent.
I've still only seen season one, though. I've watched halfway through season two.
Well, the first season's the better season, the more fun season.
Yeah, season two, sort of not sure about, but I'm going to finish it. So do you have any honorable mentions?
Yeah, well, we've already said it a few times, but I think Carrie's the ultimate high school horror movie. It has everything. It has high school bullies. It has Sissy Spacek, and she was just having the time of her life around this time because she was in so many good movies right around then. Badlands.
She's
perfect to be Carrie White. And, Piper Laurie as the mom, Dirty Pillows, the whole like locker room period scene.
Yeah.
And then the prom, of course.
The prom scene is still, and of course, Prom Night completely just rips off Carrie. Prom Night 2 in particular, Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2, rips off in a big way. Like, in fact, the last scene from that movie is Carrie. It's hilarious, like, how much they didn't even try to really make it that much different, and really poorly done in a movie that I really enjoyed, but that seems kind of ridiculous. But no, the Carrie scene is still one of the more frightening scenes in film history, the prom scene.
And it's perfectly done. I love Brian De Palma.
Well, Brian, you know, and again, hey, let's talk about another. At that time, that was a movie that there's a lot of similarities to Scream. 20 years prior to Scream, you've got a really good genre director who's mostly done suspense films, not horror as much. But a director who's actually kind of just getting his name out, too. So I guess in that way, it's a little bit different. Wes Craven had been around for 20 years over that, you know, by the time he did Scream. So you got a great director in De Palma. You've got a cast of up-and-coming actors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Travolta, Laurie, Sissy Spacek. Folks that have been some things, but this was a big movie for them.
Oh, I'm blanking on my favorite lady's name. She's the blonde bully. Nancy...
Oh, who later on
married
went on...
De Palma?
De Palma.
Was with him for a long time.
I think they married, and she was also... She was memorably in RoboCop.
Dressed to Kill.
Nancy Allen!
Yes. I love her!
Yeah, she was great. No, she's great in it. So yeah, it's a cast of up-and-coming actors who are all way older than high school age, just like Scream. And it's again, probably one of the great horror films of all time. Mm-hmm. Carrie is, no doubt.
Otherwise, I was going to say I really like Ginger Snaps.
Which I have not seen.
What? Oh my God. Come over anytime.
All right, we got to watch it. All right. The gauntlet's been thrown.
Yeah, Ginger Snaps is a Canadian werewolf movie set in high school, and it's great. Mimi Rogers as the mom is one of my favorite horror movie moms ever.
Well, she's a great actress.
And then I did want to mention, I was talking about back to school horror with a friend, and they're like, what about grad school? And then we thought of Candyman.
Oh, Tony Todd. And really his, you know, that's his juiciest role.
I will find a way to talk about Candyman more in depth on a future podcast.
We'll do that.
I'm just waiting for the prime moment.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, there were a slew of movies after Halloween, if you want to talk about, you know, high school horror movies, one of the great, I think, all-time high school horror films. However, not much of it takes place in the actual school. But
I was going to say, I was listening to a comparison between Halloween and Black Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And Black Christmas, even though that's college, I feel like the college girls there are like really independent and cool. And when you go back and check out Halloween again, you're just like, man, Lori's like the only one who doesn't think books are dumb. And like,
I know. No, the Black Christmas again, we'll talk about that, of course, in the, you know, the colder months. But, again, a great movie because the characters all have very, you know, have great personalities. They're all different. they're all, those personalities are very delineated throughout the film. And I thought, yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons it's one of the great horror films of all time as well.
Sorry, though. Halloween. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was Halloween, there was prom night, there was graduation day, there was, I mean, I guess Terror Train would be college students or high school students, but on a train.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's just a slew of them after that. It was a, you know, a genre that just kept on going for a while. Yeah, we were talking about prom night a little bit. That would have been one of my sort of mentions as well. It's, the disco songs are pretty sweet.
Oh my God, the disco scene in the first prom night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's, it's Jamie Lee Curtis's third horror film, actually. Halloween the Fog came before it. Isn't that funny?
Shoot. We have to find some way to talk about the Fog.
I know. And then Terror Train after that, which I'm a huge fan of Terror Train. 80s slashers.
Magic on a Train.
Yeah. Then she did Halloween 2. Well, I mean, it's five films right there. Boom. Five classics. And The Prom Night's by far the weakest of those.
That's why she's a scream queen.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, I mean, Prom Night's fun. Ridiculous. But again, it's more, I guess it's more part of history because of the things, some of the tropes that it sort of created. Mm-hmm. As a whole, it's really not a great film. Prom Night 2, Hello Mary Lou, that is a wacky, wacky 80s high school horror film.
I have to see it. I'm not sure if I've seen it before or not.
There's a lot of it takes place in school. It is, I don't even know how to do it justice. It's completely just like demented and bizarre. It's, you know, Canada. This is one of their great horror franchises, is the Prom Night series. And so they just went totally different direction. It barely has any connection from Prom Night 1. The only connection is that the high school is the same name. they completely changed the plot. So in Prom Night, it's a group of friends that are like in grade school and end up killing one of their friends doing a really creepy game that no one should ever play, where you back somebody up to a window saying you're going to kill them, but somehow they're your friend and then they fall out the window. Terrible idea. Awful kids probably all deserve to die. In Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2, it's all about a prom night queen who is accidentally set on fire during her coronation and then comes back and decides to possess the potential nominee for prom queen, you know, 20 or 30 years later, and yet another film that starts in the 50s and flashes back to the 80s, which evidently a big thing in the 80s. And, yeah, so they totally changed the entire thing. It really has almost no connection to Prom Night 1
really
at all.
I really gotta see it. I have been talking to Carrie for a while, and I invented Prom Night 5 in my head. It turns out I was actually thinking of Prom Night 3. So I think that means that 2 and 4 are the only ones I haven't seen.
I think so. And I love that you did. There should be a Prom Night 5. Obviously.
I literally had to Google, like, Prom Night Ice Cream Death to figure out which movie I was thinking of, because you watch so many things as a kid, and the details meld in your memory in
they
such
do.
A way.
They do. But yeah, I mean, so here's some of the weird things about Prom Night 2. Again, if you're an 80s horror fan, chances are most 80s horror fans, I don't know how many of you have actually seen Prom Night 2, but there is a rocking horse, an evil rocking horse that comes to life. There is a scene where lockers kill somebody. There is a scene where death by paper cutter, well, attempted death by paper cutter. It has the longest running fire stunt at that time in film history up till 1987, which is Mary Lou's death in the beginning of the film. Really not giving much away there. There's a chalkboard that becomes a pool of water.
That sounds incredible.
There's so many weird things about it. Lots of bizarre dream sequences done on a budget, but kind of pretty cool. The main character is possessed by Mary Lou's spirit. That's Wendy Lyon is the actress's name. So she tries to seduce her principal, a priest, her father. She makes out with her father and tries to make her mother jealous. She tries to come on to her mother as well. This spirit, Mary Lou, is out of control and obviously has some really twisted sexual desires that she needs to have addressed, evidently, in the afterlife. But it leads this poor woman to, like, go crazy. She attacks her boyfriend.
I'm pretty sure that carries through the sequels.
Yeah, I think so.
I remember this.
So here's a great line, too. I was looking through the lines. I mean, this is an example. This is, I believe, her priest saying this to her. It's late. You're tired. Your mind is playing tricks on you. She says, it's not my mind, goddammit. It's Mary Lou Maloney. So, I mean, there's stuff like that that's, you know, that you just got to kind of love if you love... So, I mean, it's kind of a cheeky horror film, but that's one of my honorable mentions right there. It's just weird. There's virtually no blood in it. I mean, you're not watching it for good gore scenes. You're just watching to see, like, what weird stuff are they going to come up with next?
I feel like there are so many school horror movies that we aren't even thinking of. I mean, there's The Faculty, there's...
Sure, Faculty's fun. I mean, we had to pick a few, but there are a lot. There are mm-hmm. a lot. A lot of them, you know, it's hard to say, do they stand out in that, are they a mark on horror in some way, you know? But there were a lot of them. Slaughter High was one that I wanted to watch.
Slaughter High!
I didn't get a chance to watch it. A British horror film that tried to play itself off as being an American horror film,
mm-hmm.
which I still have not seen. Return to Horror High is another great comedic horror film. It's not very scary, but there's some great comedy in it. Return to Horror High, that's a lot of fun as well.
Actually, saved the list that Aaron's boyfriend sent me. I hope I still have it somewhere. I was going to bring up Battle Royale.
Oh, yeah, which you know I've never seen.
Okay, Carrie. You've got to pick a day where you're ready to watch a bunch of school-aged children get brutally murdered so that we can do Ginger Snaps and Battle Royale.
I've heard Battle Royale is hardcore. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I loved it when I first saw it. It's so fun, too, because, like, it's very much like The Hunger Games. So when The Hunger Games
right.
came out, I'm just like, I don't know. I've already seen Battle Royale, but I like Hunger Games, too. Anyway... for Battle Royale, they get different weapons, and one dude gets, like, a fan, another dude gets, like, a pot lid, and then other people get, like, legit weapons.
How wrong.
I know. But the way that pans out is excellent. I don't think we've mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street or The Craft yet, but, yeah, there are plenty of high school horrors.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street is a classic. The Craft is great, too. Yeah, I mean, we could probably do multiple episodes, really.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, what I was thinking is Nightmare on Elm Street would be a great example of a dream episode.
Dream horror?
Dream mm-hmm. horror. Oh, for you. Paper House?
The ultimate.
Have you seen Paper House?
I haven't.
Okay, we're going to need to talk about that for dream horror. That is, again, I always talk about how, in my opinion, the late 80s to mid-90s in horror films, it's kind of a desert as far as really good stuff, like true classics of the genre. But there are a few movies like Paper House during that time that are kind of that are weird and kind of bizarre and dreamlike that are really good, kind of forgotten.
Yeah, I remember a lot of the things that I watched in the 90s like not being awesome, but I feel like there has to be a ton of like indie horror that I totally missed out on that's out
right.
there for me to see now.
It's got to be. But yeah, so I mean, you know, again, we'll probably incorporate some of the movies we didn't talk about in high school and college horror, back to school horror, for other episodes or other genres, because a lot of them can, you know, go in different directions. But yeah, there's just a few.
Mm-hmm.
A few of the ones we watched. And if you haven't seen all the ones we watched about honorable mentions or not, we recommend seeing, in some cases just for the fact they're part of horror history, in some cases because they're just freaking awesome.
Yeah. Do you have anything you're excited to watch coming up? High school set or not?
You know, right now, I mean, I want to see, as far as new things, of course I'm looking forward to It.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about that. You know, there's a number of things that we have missed, I think, collectively over the past few months.
I'm still going to watch Annabelle Creation.
I want to see Annabelle Creation. I've heard nothing but good things about it. I mean, yeah, it's mainstream horror, which is hit or miss, but I think it's still James Wan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sold on just about anything Juan does these days. I think.
Well,
he's...
do we quickly want to say that it's very sad that Tobe Hooper passed away?
Yeah, we should talk about that. So, yeah, Tobe Hooper was pretty influential in horror film history. I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of the great all-time, probably top 10 all-time horror films.
Yeah, Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. And even though Steven Spielberg was still considered to be in control of Poltergeist,
mm-hmm.
it still does have, you know, Tobe Hooper... blueprints on it. Life Force, which is one of my favorite Alien films.
Carrie and I were talking right before we started recording about how much we both really love
Life
Force.
We love this film. And Life Force is something that you should definitely see if you're, again, 80s sci-fi or horror fan, because it's as much a sci-fi film as it is a horror film.
Oh, yeah.
Originally titled Vampires from Outer Space, if that gives you any sense of itself.
Yeah, Sexy Soul Vampire.
Yeah. And yeah, so Hooper did, I mean, he was responsible for some of the truly iconic films, like we just mentioned.
Yeah, I did see Funhouse at one point when I was young, but I barely remember it, so I'm going to watch that again. I've never seen that one about the alligator.
Oh, Eaten Alive. Mm-hmm. I've never seen Eaten Alive. He did Salem's Lot
as well. Oh, Salem's Lot, of course. Yeah.
Salem's Lot. He did Funhouse. Funhouse is cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it again.
I think it was a bomb in the theaters, but I think it's a neat little film. It's bizarre. And really, it's the end. There's a great fight scene at the end. It's one of my favorite parts of that film.
Did you watch his last movie, the Jin one, the Evil Genius?
Jin, I was just looking at that. No, I have not.
I know it had horrible reviews, but it was in my Netflix queue for forever. And I went to look after I heard he'd passed away. And I'm like, oh, now you take it off. So I feel kind of sad I didn't watch it. I'm going to rent it and see it too at some point.
Yeah, I'm curious about it too. And we've had a few luminaries this year who have passed away.
Yes. George Romero. And then right after that, Martin Landau.
Martin Landau, I know, who a film veteran, but also a horror veteran for sure.
No, I mean,
you know,
no matter how burned out on zombie movies I get, I'm never sick of three George Romero movies.
No, I mean, Romero is one of the godfathers of horror, of modern horror.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm reading that book that you let me borrow from the library that I can't think of the title now. And, you know, one of the first things.
Shock Value,
yes. And I was reading actually the scenes where it's discussing George getting Night of the Living Dead made and sort of just the implications of the film and both political and social at that time. Mm-hmm. It's an important movie, actually, in the scope of film history. The Crazies, Martin, which I think is one of the most underrated vampire films of
drug
all time.
Vampire.
Yeah. One of the most underrated vampire films of all time with a couple of the best, one of the most iconic scenes in horror film history, in my opinion, near the end. Where he leaps out of the bed, and it's, oh man, there's some great, great scenes in there. Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. He wrote Creepshow too.
Yeah, Dean and I actually had a chance. We went to a wedding up north, and we got a chance to go through Evan City, Pennsylvania, where Night of the Living Dead was filmed. And we went to the cemetery, we went to a museum. It was great. I had so much fun. I think at first Dean had fun, and then he's like, oh, I didn't realize he wanted to spend, hours here. But he's a good husband.
Yes. Well, he did The Crazies, too, which I think was remade to great effect in 2010 with Timothy Oliphant.
I have not seen the remake of The Crazies.
It's awesome. Awesome. I highly recommend it. Rare that you'll hear me say that a horror remake is good or comparable to the first one, but that's one.
We should have an episode on remakes.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, Romero's blueprints are all over horror for decades and decades. He wrote Monkey Shines, Creepshow 2, Tales from the Dark Side, The Dark Half, another Stephen King adaptation. He did the later Dead films, which, weren't as effective as the originals, which are really wonderful. But yeah, this guy, so for 40 years, he was a force in horror, 40 plus years. So yeah, so sad to see some of the masters die this year.
Yeah. And of course, not this year, but still recently, Wes Craven before.
Right. And I mean, it's, looking at Craven directed 5 films that are all considered to be all-time horror classics. Really, the rest of what he did almost isn't nearly as important as just those 5 films. Cement him as one of the greats.
There's just going to be a horror void in the world after John Carpenter goes.
I know. He's part of that group of sort of the vanguards of modern horror, starting from the 70s until now. Yeah. So, there we go. So we got back to school horror. We recommend you go out and check some out now that it's a perfect time of the year to do that.
Yeah, Carrie and I have not been our best about updating social media, but I'm going to get back on Instagram. Carrie will do more Facebook stuff.
Yes.
We'll get that stuff going again.
We appreciate everyone listening, and we hope if you're out there that you're enjoying our podcast, My Bloody Horrorcast.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
All right, yep. See ya.
Bye.